It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN, a man we have interviewed before. Moby is in the studio. Can I just tell you, this goes on my list of, you know, if they say you're going to a tropical island and you can only bring a few select songs to put on your iPod. That song, Southside, I love it. Not one of your favorite songs, is it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm used to maligning other people, not necessarily maligning myself, but it's not, and it's hard for me to say this, but of all the songs I've made in my life, I think it's okay. Like, I think it's a perfectly nice song, but it doesn't, I don't have a huge emotional connection to it.
I just love it. That's one of my songs.
But what happens when you're doing a show and the crowd wants it and you're like, I don't want to play this song?
I play whatever hits or quasi-hits I have.
Yeah.
Because we've all had that experience, like, as an audience member.
Yeah.
Like, you go to see Duran Duran.
Yeah.
And they say, this is a new song. And you're like, oh, that means it's time to go, like, get a drink.
Or
go check
bathroom
your text
time.
Messages or something. And I see that happening when I tour as well. Like,
yeah.
No one wants to hear a new song. So I play as many old, familiar hits or songs as
sure.
I can, because same thing, like, you go to see Neil Diamond. What happens when Neil Diamond says, this is a new song? That's when you're like, it's time to go get nachos or whatever.
A mass
exodus. I love
exodus.
Neil Diamond, but like...
Sure. You want Longfellow Serenade.
Yeah.
You paid to
no,
see
you
your
don't.
Longfellow
you want
Serenade.
Sweet Caroline.
That's okay, yeah. Too, I guess.
Ba, ba, ba.
Longfellow Serenade.
So I very happily play old songs over and over again, because I assume if I were in the audience, that's what I would want
sure.
to hear as well.
Yeah.
All right. So someone that was... an inspiration to music of today, David Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
You loved him, didn't you?
Yeah, my first ever job was as a caddy at this very fancy golf course in Darien, Connecticut. And I'm little now, and I was even littler then. I was like 12 years old. And I guess this resonates what with, you know, Bill Murray, Caddyshack, Chicago-based broadly.
Mm-hmm.
So my first job was as a caddy, and I was only big enough to carry old people's golf clubs.
Why? Because they didn't have as many
they
clubs?
They didn't have as many clubs, and they walked slower. So
did they tip better, at least?
They're like a dollar for 18 rounds.
Yeah,
I mean, granted,
enough.
But this was like back in the 30s.
Oh, yeah, way back.
And I only kept this job long enough to buy David Bowie records. And once I had Heroes and Lodger and Station to Station, I quit, because why else would I keep working? Because I already had David Bowie records. And then fast forward a few decades, and he was my neighbor.
What?
Yeah, in New York, and we went on tour together. We had Christmases together.
Wow.
We went to the deli together.
Wow.
We walked around the neighborhood and reminisced.
Please tell us that at some point you explained to him the impact he had on your life. You must have, right?
Well, here's another Chicagoland reference. I became very good friends with David Bowie, almost like sort of like older brother,
yeah.
younger brother type relationship. But in the back of my head, I kept thinking of that scene in Wayne's World when he meets Alice Cooper,
yeah.
you know, the We're Not Worthy.
Yeah.
Like, I really was like, who am I kidding? Like, I'm pretending to be a peer with the greatest musician of all time, you know? Like, I've got a couple, like, sort of knockoff songs, and he has the greatest records that anyone has ever made. So, like... we were pals, but in the back of my mind, I knew that I was a pretender.
You have amazed us with musician, DJ, author, photographer, this new book, Porcelain, a Memoir. Now, this goes back, I was reading something, I can't remember where I was reading it, but they said something like, you're gonna see some of the scuzziness of your early days, but there's some different parts of it as well. You've made a journey, haven't you, in the 10 years, 80s to 90s, is that what it is?
Yeah, the book starts in 1989, and in 1989, I was squatting in an abandoned factory in a crack neighborhood, making around $3,000 a year, and I didn't have a shower, I didn't have a bathroom. And all I wanted was to get a record deal in New York and to DJ in New York. And so then I got my little record deal. I got my DJ job in New York. And I moved to New York at the height of the crack epidemic, when New York was at its sort of lowest point. And I loved it so much. And then, so also the first half of this book, I was a very serious Christian and a very sober person.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through the book, I became a very unsober person. So the second half of the book is just this drunken, debauched mess, and I lost my record deal. I started battling panic attacks. My mom dies. And then the book basically ends at the end of my, what I thought was the end of my career right before the album Play came out. Like, I thought Play was going to be this super obscure underground record that was going to represent the end of my career as a musician. I was going to go back to teaching community college. And I thought everything was done. So that's the period that's covered in the book.
Were these changes in you, and those are some pretty drastic changes, were they evident at the time, or were they more easy to see now looking back on it?
Like the sobriety?
Well, yeah, all of it.
I mean,
yeah.
It was pretty easy for me to recognize my lack of sobriety.
Yeah, I'm sure that. But did you say, yeah, boy, I was one guy 6 months ago, and look at what a different guy I am.
Yeah, in fact, and I feel weirdly narcissistic. I mean, first of all, I feel narcissistic writing a memoir. Like at its core, it's kind of a narcissistic endeavor.
Yeah.
But especially, I find myself quoting myself.
Oh.
It's like really dangerous narcissism territory. But there's one chapter in the book where I was like, towards the end of the book, I'm dating a sex worker. We're in Atlantic City.
What's a sex worker?
Someone
pardon me for being...
gets paid to do sex things.
Prostitute.
Oh, it can, okay.
More broadly speaking, it could be a phone sex worker. Oh. It could be a dominatrix. It could be someone, you know, who
someone
makes
who works
a lot
in
of
the
friends
sex
professionally.
Field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a sex worker.
So
I'm sorry, I never heard that term before.
Sure.
And this is, most people have meetings with this individual and then move on to the next sex worker. You
yeah,
fell in love.
In some capacity, and she was my girlfriend. And
could you introduce her, Moby, when you were out with friends, go,
oh, because most of my friends were other sex workers.
Oh, they were.
Or they were dating sex workers.
Oh,
or,
right.
And it was New York. It was the 90s.
Yeah. You
know, it was a way different time.
And but so there's this moment where she and I were in Atlantic City at the Merv Griffin International Resorts Casino.
Nice.
Getting blind drunk by ourselves on a Sunday night. And I had this moment where I realized, like, oh, I used to teach Bible study. I used to be this serious, sober Christian. And I thought that it was kind of anthropological.
Yeah.
But then I realized I'd been doing it long enough that it stopped being anthropological. Like, I was just a drunk.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't kid myself and say, oh, I used to be a drunk Bible study teacher and now I'm not. No, I was just a sad drunk.
How many years have you been sober?
This time, 8 years.
Congratulations. Eight.
And thanks. This That's time, great. It takes a couple times sometimes, or more than two, right?
For me, I mean, my only claim to fame as a dysfunctional alcoholic is the first time I got sober, I was 13. Because I'd started drinking
what?
And doing drugs when I was 10. Yeah. So it's been a long, odd journey with sweet lady liquor.
Yeah. Yeah.
The family, I know you said your mom had died, but prior mm-hmm. to her death, and then your dad also, were they trying to help you through this? Was it better to just be separate from them? What were they doing?
Well, when I was growing up, I would steal liquor and drugs from my family.
You did.
So their perspective might have been a little bit skewed.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to see the Outlaws and ZZ Top one time at Alpine Valley, and Woodfield Mall used to have a bus that took you. I went with a bunch of friends, and I remember taking a Mr. Clean bottle and putting, my mom wasn't a very big drinker, but we had a liquor cabinet, and I put vodka or something clear, it might have been gin, in the Mr. Clean bottle, and I was very excited that it was lemon-scented Mr. Clean because there was a little residue left over. Mm-hmm. You think back and go, yeah, that was pretty stupid.
But then again, I guess it also begs that sort of adolescent the question about the adolescent logic of, like, it's less conspicuous to be drinking out of a Mr. Clean bottle
I
than
know.
Anything else. Like, no one's going to notice that.
Mm-hmm. No one
because
questioned
it's perfectly
that.
Normal to be 14 years old drinking liquid out of a Mr. Clean bottle.
I know. I never yeah. even thought of that till just now.
How about yeah. that?
We're talking with Moby, and you are going to be appearing tonight at City Winery. It's a great venue. You've got your book, Porcelain, a Memoir. You're going to do some reading, some yep. singing.
The singing, I don't know about. I was listening to
signing.
You guys
I'm sorry.
Signing and singing are very
yes,
similar.
They are, but they look similar on paper.
So probably more signing than singing.
A book signing,
a
yes.
A book signing, I suppose. I mean, I could sing the book, like kind of like R. Kelly's out. Trapped in the Closet, or whatever, where it's like, you know, you just sing
Into
all the words.
Closet.
It's beautiful.
I'm in yeah. the closet.
Rod McEwen used to do that sometimes,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and could William do Rod... Shatner.
Yeah, Shatner does it,
He
too.
Just randomly just starts singing
whatever yeah. he wants. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Lucy
all right.
in the Sky,
oh,
whatever.
That would be great. Moby is here. It's us, Bill and Wendy. Stick around. It's WGN.
We've got Moby in the studio. He's going to be appearing at the City Winery tonight for his new book, Porcelain, a Memoir. Some stories. Are you going to be doing any singing? You said something funny off the air for your book singing.
I don't know what we're going to do. I think I'm in conversation with someone. At present, in my ignorance, I do not know with whom I will be speaking.
It's a surprise. You'll have to go tonight to find out.
So I'll be talking, and then we'll be doing a Q&A, and then I'll do my book signing. For better or worse, there won't be any singing. And
who knows? You might whip out a little something.
Yeah, but one thing we were talking about during the break was getting old, because
it's happening.
It's happening, and to quote Woody Allen, like, it's better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I was doing a book singing yesterday in Minnesota, and I was referring to myself. I was saying, like, oh, like, you get older and, like, you just become less relevant, or you have, like, shifting relevance. And this person asked me, and they said, what do you mean less relevant? And I was like, well, age is similar to hair loss. And I'm very experienced with both.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, if you're losing your hair, yeah. it's not inherently a bad thing, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But it's what you do in response to it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I lost my hair and I was told by an ex-girlfriend, just shave your head. That's okay. It's when you do terrible things to your receding hairline that it goes wrong. And it's the same thing as I'm sure you guys have experienced many times. Like, yeah. musicians age, they become less relevant, but they refuse to accept it.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, they show up on a radio station, like, angry and bitter that, you know, they're in their 40s and 50s and people aren't lining up the way they used to.
Yeah.
They're not being treated the same. But, like, that happens to everybody.
Sure, you know? Does.
And, like, and there's nothing wrong with it. You just kind of accept it. And, like, hopefully you move on to other things where you maybe have, like, different avenues of relevance as opposed to, like, pursuing, like, adolescent dreams of stardom.
But you just had, moments ago, you had the ultimate compliment paid to you. One of our bosses came in. A lot of our bosses came in. But Jimmy DeCastro said to you, you were the guy that both myself and my son enjoyed together. And that's a huge deal to bring two generations together through your music. That's not easy.
Well, especially considering when I was growing up, I never for a second thought that I would have a career as a musician.
Mm.
I thought I was going to teach community college.
Mm-hmm. What did you teach?
I was going to be a philosophy professor. That's what I studied in school. And I thought I'd spend my entire life teaching community college, making music in my spare time, probably being in a loveless marriage.
Mm. And to a sex worker.
Maybe. Is Connecticut, so like a very shut down, dysfunctional sex
That's
worker.
That's better. Like, That's more know, acceptable.
Kind of like Hester Prynne or something. And so the fact that I've ever been able to make a record or play a concert, yeah. like, I never expected even that. So, like, even to know, I don't mean this in a disingenuous way, but, like, to know that I've made music that has reached people
yeah.
is so much more than I ever expected.
Sure. Wow.
And some cool things in between. You've done the soundtracks to the couple of Bourne movies.
Mm-hmm.
30 Rock, pretty great.
Yeah, the cameo on 30 Rock was so much fun. Although I did have a very awkward, oh, look, there's a whole
There's a lot of people coming by to say
outside.
Hello to you.
Hi, everybody. Hmm. They're like, are you guys talking to John Malkovich?
That's John Malkovich, everybody.
Like, the other day, just as a tangent, some guy stopped me on the street in LA, and he was very emotional. He pulled me aside, and he said, I just have to tell you, your music has meant so much to me. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he's like, no, really, your music has gotten me through the hardest times. And I said, wow, that's so nice to hear. And then he said, Losing My Religion is my favorite song of all
no.
time. And I just nodded. I was like, wow, thank you. That makes me so
You should have just said, what's the frequency, Kenneth?
Yeah. But 30 Rock. So yeah. I did my cameo on 30 Rock. And Tina Fey was the most perfect woman.
Good.
On Present Company excluded.
Thank you. And she's not a sex worker.
No.
Neither am I.
Not currently.
But so I met Tina Fey, and granted, she's married and she has a child. And all the cast and crew were watching, and I picked up her child and was, like, playing with her child, and everyone was laughing. And then all of a sudden, her child turned beet red and started throwing up everywhere.
Oh, no.
And Tina Fey grabbed her baby and, like, scowled at me and said, like, thanks for almost killing my baby. That was not how I was expecting it to go.
I hope she was kidding.
She was kidding.
She was kidding, but the child was very unhappy. Like, the child turned pink and threw up.
Yeah. Were you wearing a new cologne? Was what?
I think the child maybe was kind of prone to turning pink and throwing up.
Exorcist baby.
Is it something you're hoping to do more of, more scoring of TV shows and movies? That's fun, right?
I like it when it happens.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to do it as a job.
Yeah.
Same thing with like acting. Like I have a bit part on this Patrick Stewart TV show called Blunt Talk.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't want it to be a job. It's just a fun thing to do.
Right.
Stops being fun.
Yeah. Like I really don't like the idea, as odd as this might sound, I don't like the idea of having a career. Like I love the idea of making music because I love making music, but I want that to be the goal in and of itself.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking like, how do I increase my personal brand, what have you? Like that just seems a little creepy.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we were talking about Kanye
right.
earlier. You know, and his I love shoes. Kanye, but I, yeah. And
could you explain any of that to us? Because we can't figure it out.
I'm a little confused. Not to start any feuds or anything, yeah. but I'm just genuinely confused how you spend $50 million on gold toilets and then go to the world and say, okay, I've just spent all my money on gold toilets and private planes.
Right.
Could you now give me $50 million? Because I think I want to do something good with it, but I don't know what that is yet.
Seems out of whack, doesn't
it? It's a little bit like...
Seems
like,
whack.
Of all right. of the sort of deserving charities in the world,
yeah.
Kanye's gold toilet fund does not seem like one of them, you know?
And are you cool with Eminem? You got a feud going with Eminem?
No, that was such a long time ago. And... as far as I know, like I doubt he even knows who I am anymore. Like, because his career has done like super, super well, and I've kind of drifted a little bit into
obscurity.
You've
done fine.
So, but the only thing that confuses me, because I think Eminem is very talented, yeah. seems very smart. I don't know why he seems so sad.
There is that.
Like, when you've
there?
Sold 100 million records, why keep doing it if you always seem unhappy?
Right.
You know?
It's got to come from within. To make yeah. you
it
happy.
It does, but you see this with a lot of the big success stories. Despite all the money and the fame and the fortune and stuff like that, there's still an underlining, I'm still not happy.
Yeah. And then it's, I guess it's the idea of, they think like, okay, they've sold 70 million records. Maybe they'll be happy when they sell 80 million
right.
records. Or like the executive who has the 8-seater private plane and they're miserable. So they think, well, when I have the 12-seater private plane. And at some point, I think like, no, the way you're going to be happy is like spend time with your family and
right.
play with puppies and go hiking.
That's you it. Know?
That's the way to do it.
Like go to the farmer's market and make a salad. Like you're probably going to be way happier than like buying a new private plane.
Agreed. And it's a little cheaper.
Yeah.
It's a good way to do it. Such a pleasure to see you again.
Oh, nice to see you guys as well.
And you will be at City Winery tonight, book signing, not singing, Q&A. The new book is Porcelain, a Memoir. You can get it everywhere and go to Mobi.com to find out more. Thank you so much for coming
up. I think
up.
I might actually do some book singing. Just
you will.
To, yeah.
just to prove Thank that you. It can be done. Thanks, yeah. Mobi.
It's
great
a book.
To see
it's
you.
A book. Yeah. It's by me.
Yeah. Porcelain.
Yeah. See, okay. it'll happen.
Thanks.
We'll find out what's okay. coming up next in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.